you? Did you have him smile at you? Did you ever really listen to him? Did he ever do a mean thing? We must honor him for what he was and is. A prince. Our black, shining prince.
Do you feel refreshed? It sounded like a family reunion out there. It did. You know, everybody just talking all at once and laughing and purging and buzzing and having a good time. I have to recognize some of my college buddies who are here tonight. Just wave your hands. There you go. They're from University of Portland. We all graduated from University of Portland, and you talk about an experience. It was quite the experience. It was a great experience, but I did a lot of learning and a lot of teaching the whole time, because I went in 1983, and my mother graduated from there in 1952, and my dad graduated from there in 1948. So when you think about the climate in 1948 for a my stepfather was Jewish, for a nice Jewish boy in a Catholic institution. I'll tell you this one story and then we'll move on to what we're doing here. But the story was that he went out and he snuck across campus because he wanted to leave a little present for my mom. And you know, everything had to be on the hush-hush, because he was a German Jew, and here's my mother, Native American, African American, or from the South, right? And the fact that you would see, well, I should say this clearly, she was Native American and Mexican. So he snuck over to give her a little present, and they had to keep everything quiet because, you know, it wasn't... They were always going to be friends, according to everybody at U of P, okay? So he left the package and he ran back over to Christie Hall. And as he ran up the stairs, Father Hoiberg was right there, and he said, Master Isaacs, where have you been? And he said, Mass? And he said, okay, whether you know him or not, that's going to be 15 Hail Marys. And I want you to be in Mass every day this week. So that little Jewish guy had to go to Mass every week and do his Hail Marys. But fast forward, and I had the opportunity to be a part of the theater company there. I was the first black woman in the theater company at U of P. The important part of that story is to most people, I was the other. So what I would do is I would run around, because I'm social, I would run around the cafeteria and sit at different tables intentionally and get to know different people. Fast forward 30 plus years, and those people are my dearest friends. My dearest friends. More so than anybody who looks like me. But what I would tell you, if you are classified as the other, what you must realize is you have to take the steps. Because if you wait for people to step toward you, your heart will be broken. You are the one that has the tenacity and the strength and the curiosity to go toward hope. rather than away from it. I just knew we paid a heck of a lot of money for me to go to that school, and I was going to have some friends when I left. But more so than that, I just knew that I needed to reach out because I came from a family of people who reach out. But now what I've seen here is that you've reinvigorated my sense of love for humanity and for family, extended family. And I know that I know that I know that we are on the path to reconciliation. It is not easy. And many of the people that you consider to think like you will not understand when you reach toward the other. But don't be afraid. Somebody will reach back. Because it's important for our livelihood to be a part of this bigger family. We will reach back. But take one little step toward. I'm going to snatch you up and run with you. Okay? We can do it. We'll do it. We'll do it. Okay. You're going to run with me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're in.
Okay, guys. This is the hot seat.
My question to you, and anyone can volunteer to answer, but my question to you is, what do you need for people to think about, consider when they leave here? What would you like them to ponder, if you will, or to think about? Now, this is just thinking, because the next question is going to be, what action do you want people to take in order to bring us a sense of understanding of one another? Okay? And you can answer those in either order.
I think that the vast majority of all immigrants that come here for something good. And all immigrants, the vast majority of immigrants, both legal and illegal, come here to do good, to work and to have a new life from whatever background they come from. So they're sort of inherently people who are positive, who want to make good. Now, like in any group, there are some bad apples, but the group as a whole, wherever country you come from, come here to participate in a positive way.
I would say, think of them as somebody who just left their house and you come to a new place, and they also want to build a community as well for them to feel that they belong. So embrace them, see them individually, and see them as who they are. Don't differentiate because they have different hair color, they speak different languages, or they have different culture and they act sometimes differently than most people, but they are human beings too, and they just want to be embraced. So take their hand and then ride along.
I was just thinking about, I think about barriers and challenges for anybody who moves just across counties. It's a new environment that they have to adjust to. And so as someone who worked with immigrants, actually, as a case manager, I've seen real life, not just for myself, because I didn't really process my journey very well, but I saw myself in those families that I served. So when I think about, yes, these people might have come from running away from stuff that you can't even imagine, but their journey and their time here is just as challenging. You may not have a bullet to their head, but they're facing those challenges, and those are big enough. And so acknowledging that challenge that they face and thinking about, are you contributing to their challenges? Are you being that burden, that extra burden? And are you sensitive to their experiences? And that's what I think about. Even just me, someone who's lived here for 15 years, that I feel different. I don't have their experiences anymore, even though I face similar challenges. So thinking about how are you contributing to their burden? And what are you doing to contribute to the betterment and improving those challenges and removing those barriers for them?
Well, one thing that I think about a lot is that it doesn't matter where we all come from somewhere, but we're human. You feel the same as I do. You suffer. Those of us who pay rent, we all pay rent. We have to pay a mortgage. We have struggles. We have problems. We have days that we don't sleep, and we have a little less patience with others. Just the other day, something happened to me. I was trying to get into the car wash, and there's a guy blocking the sidewalk. So I had to make a maneuver in order to pass him. And I'm cleaning my car, frantically upset about it. And I'm like, what a jerk. He can move his car. And then I thought to myself, what happened? Maybe he ran out of gas. Maybe his car broke down. So I took 2 seconds to think about it. And I look around and say, excuse me, sir, do you need help? And he says, well, I do. I ran out of gas. So you want to push it? And it was funny because I felt bad afterwards because I'm like, I'm judging him without knowing. So I actually, after that, I say, well, let's move it so you're not on the sidewalk. We did, and the guy's like, that was nice of you. And I'm like, well, I got to confess to you that I was thinking that you were doing that on purpose. So I felt bad about it.
Yeah.
So putting yourself in the other person's shoes, just for a second, I think that helps a lot. Mm-hmm. And in the very end, we are humans. Human is human. Mm-hmm. We all feel the same. So it's good to recognize that sometimes.
Well, that is very good. Very good to recognize
that. That really summarizes what I was thinking is that we need to listen to each other's stories. And we can't ever assume that we know where the person has been and where they are at that moment. I am a teacher. I work in an elementary school, and often a kid will come and act up, and immediately, you know, you take it personally, and why isn't the kid following the rules of whatever thing you're doing, you know, why? Instead of taking a step back and going, okay, let me hear what is happening in your life, and why are you... With that story about the immigrants in my school, there's a lot of kids that are coming to school incredibly stressed out. They're little people, they can't process what's happening, but they're totally stressed out about what they're hearing at home, what they're, you know, the fact that the families are coming up with these plans of what, emergency plans. And so we need to do that more. We need to listen to each other's stories. We need to sit at the different tables and hear our stories, because we do have more in common than we have different, you know.
Yeah. The people that I have experience with that are still my friends, the reason we're so bonded together is that we all were in choir together. Because as I got in choir and I'd go sit at the table and tell them about choir, I just started bringing my little international group of friends all together, right? And we sang Gregorian chant. And I still do. You see? The assumption that people even here in Portland make is, you must be a great blues singer. I can't stand the blues.
What's wrong with you?
I mean, I don't want to say I can't stand it. That was just for the joke, right? But, you know, that's not my... When someone asks me to sing, that's not the first thing that comes to my mind. But it's the first thing that comes to other people's mind when they look at me and they say, oh, she's a substantial black woman. She must sing the blues. I hit you up with a little gospel and a whole bunch of Gregorian chant. Yeah. Renaissance chamber music, you know? Jazz. I'll do some jazz. What I'm saying, though, is that our assumptions really get us in trouble. It distances us all the time. You know, we're constantly pushing away from each other rather than pulling in. So, what was your worst experience where you felt minimalized? And what was your most hopeful experience dealing with diversity? And these are not easy questions. And then I want you to tell us how to save the world. So what is your, well, yeah, what was your hardest situation? And then what was your most hopeful? This is hard too.
Too many to choose from.
Does someone have have one out in the audience? Something that was difficult, really a difficult situation. Think about that and make sure that you share it with someone. Share those ideas with someone. This is the other journey in purging, right? You gotta share it. Don't let it just sit in your head and eat away at you and you just be mad all the time. You know, you gotta let it go in some way. Anybody got an idea? What's your most hopeful? Let's start with the positive. And then if we don't have time for the negative, oh well.
I think the most positive experience I've had was the day I became a citizen. It was a couple of years back, and I'd been here for a very long time and decided to become a citizen. And that ceremony was much more moving than I thought it would have been. I was very shaken and moved by that and felt very connected. And we were, I think, 22 people from 22 countries that day. And they made us stand up when they mentioned the country. And it was incredibly, it was an incredible experience. I wish all you Americans could go through that.
Yeah, we might know the Pledge of Allegiance. We might actually know the Star-Spangled Banner. We might know our history.
I don't
go through it one more time.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot. You know, I had to do the citizenship test. That was fairly easy. I would kind of query my American friends, and there were a lot of deficits there.
That's true. Yeah. Most hopeful.
Well, actually, this came together. I played soccer like 2 months when I was a kid. Then my daughter started playing soccer when I had him. So it was like, she was 3 years old, my daughter. And just recently, 3 years ago, I started doing some coaching with him. And my daughter was kind of afraid to play with him. And I felt always in a situation like that, like you get to be, but the last game, it happened that the other coach and the other team, besides that they were drinking, they were being mean to the kids. And I mean, we're talking about 10-year-olds here. In our soccer league, they teach us that you cheer football teams and you cheer positive things to the kids. Even if it's to the kid, that was a good pass, nice goal, everything, the positive. So not just the coach, but also the parents, they were just so negative and aggressive. There was my players, and one of the parents came to me and said, you know what? All the parents over there, they've just been mean to our girls. And I feel like when I got on the other side, I told the two coaches, like, I'm going to go on the other side. And this just happened about 2 weeks ago. And I'm grateful that all the friends that they're coaching with me, we all have different backgrounds. There's some Brazilians, some Argentinians. We all play. And what I had the difficult task to turn around the energy. And I knew I was going to be looked down at because I'm from elsewhere. So I went and blocked everybody's view. And I stood there and I was just yelling at the girls, great job, keep having fun, whatever. And then I had two moms talking trash about the whole theme and how the girls were playing bad and their own kids. And I say, you know what? You guys had a really good goalie. That's a great defense. and that.
Say that one more time.
You have really good goalie, and that's a great defense because they had really good defense, but they forget to see the positive. So what I'm hopeful for every time in a situation that comes to me that way, I feel like it's my duty to defuse the situation before it comes to a situation. Luckily, we all can do it. As an immigrant, I feel sometimes that I have to be the one who has to do the part of keeping things in peace. And I'm hopeful that that changes. Because it's not just my responsibility to keep things in order, but everybody else's. But we cannot give something we don't have. If we always been taught to do, thank you. Yeah, it was been taught to.
Sorry. Okay, I got you.
thank you. I'm famous. So
I know this is what it feels like when you're part of the White House.
Right, I was just
go ahead.
Okay. So and
such a beautiful track you were on. I'm sorry,
this is live theater, guys. And what was I saying?
That is your responsibility. Lord, I'm gonna help him out. It's his responsibility, though. He feels as though it's his responsibility to go forward and to diffuse the situation so that the joy of just coming together can keep happening rather than the negative cloud coming over the top of it and changing our attitudes. But I can tell you this, it's not just because of immigrant families playing soccer. This is just how Americans play soccer. They because we're not really that great at it. But except at University of Portland. But seriously, it's kind of our duty a little bit to help.
So the I situation. Think thank you. I think what I was gonna say is that it's hard. I think the point is that we cannot give something we don't have. We're not taught how to be kind to one another. We have the responsibility to be that person who teaches someone else to be that person. You know, like, just to say, Eva, how you doing? I see you seem stressed. Are you okay? Mm-hmm. That act, she might not know how to do it, but that has a repercussion. She will see someone else, and it will be the same. I'm sure many of us have stopped in the road and say, hey, somebody has a flat tire, broken car, something, you say, hey, do you need help? The guy who I helped after I was in my head being a jerk to him because he was mean and blocking the sidewalk in my head again. After I helped him, he had the person come and help him. They put some gas in the car and he say, can I buy you a cup of coffee? And I say, I don't really need a coffee. I have a cup of coffee here. But how about this? How about you pay it forward? If you see someone who needs help, just do it. Mm-hmm. You're going to buy someone else's day. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the important part.
Well, okay. So, like I said, I'm kind of going through this kind of crisis with some anger and with the whole thing that's going on. So, when people say, you know, be the better person, do that outreach, I'm kind of disagreeing with that currently, because I feel like that others have to own up to their own,
that's true,
you know, for their part. Actually, you know, I've attended a lot of events where we talk about how do we combat, you know, racism, how do we combat all these issues, and sometimes I would hear, oh, be a good neighbor. I'm like, I don't have to be a good neighbor, actually. For people to hate me, you know what I mean? For someone to be so racist towards me, for me to have to, I'm gonna use a bad language here, I don't have to suck up to people for them to not hate me. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. I feel like there is like this expectation, be nice to each other, so I don't have to be taking that step always. Like, I don't want to have to smile so people don't think I'm a threat. I don't have to smile. Some days I might be having a bad day. Why do I have to smile all the time to not be taken as a threat? So to the hope, because the hardest day of my life was when my daughter came home last year in November and said to me in tears, "Mom, are they going to hurt us?" As a Muslim in a school district where there were no other Muslim kids, where kids were bullying her. And these are kids. So I lost hope because we were teaching kids to be mean to each other. Because where did that child learn from that stuff?
That's right.
So I was losing hope. So that was a difficult day because I was angry, but I needed to be a mother who's tender, who told her daughter it's gonna be okay. But I didn't believe it, but I was telling her it's gonna be okay. But I wasn't believing it myself. So it was difficult. So the hope came, and I'm gonna say two ways. One, that one professor who's really mean to me back in the day, who told me that she didn't teach English in her classroom. When I took exams on a Scantron, she couldn't fail me. So sometimes, there are things people can't do. There are systemic ways you can win, right? Sometimes, whether or not people like it, laws are upheld. Whether I'm an immigrant or not, I have rights. So those are the hope that I have. That recently, the Ninth Circuit Court, I think, had denied the travel ban,
right?
So that, for me, that's hope, because I think that's the fifth or the sixth court that said no.
Exactly.
So sometimes races don't get their way because the laws are laws. And so luckily in this country, we have laws that can be upheld whether or not people like it. So that gives me hope. So systemically winning, right? Standing up to that.
And you know what, I'm going to clarify something for you, because I think the misunderstanding is that I'm asking you to walk down the street with a goofy smile on your face while somebody spits on you and just keep walking and smiling and walk on by.
But people don't clarify
that. That is not reality.
Right,
okay?
But I feel like that when people say that they don't, it's not communicated well enough, that it's upon the immigrant, it's upon that other person to be nice and be all good so that they are not taken as a threat. So I feel like people should clarify that when they communicate.
And in clarification, I will say that I come from a family who has people who's been lynched. My mother saw one of her friends hanging in the South. My family was from Texas, okay? 22,000 KKK members, chapters, existed here in Oregon when they came here and existed all the way up through about 1975, okay? I went to schools where I needed to figure out how to sustain myself while I learned, so I could be smart enough to handle the law and to make change and to make relationships where I needed those relationships to be made, because every stride that has been made in this country was not made by just me. There were so many people of so many different backgrounds who stood with us to even get us to this point. So I'm not a kumbaya girl by any stretch of the imagination. I'm very clear on where I came from, who I am, what my history is. But what I know that I know that I know is that God placed me here as a happy person. And I'm not going to let any of this change me from that happy person. I can scold you. and you'll think I'm loving you with honey, but you'll get the message. You'll get the message, and I don't have to demean myself in any way to help you get the message. There is no reason why I should be on this stage. 25 years I have sung and done a concert for 5,000 people every Christmas in this space, on this stage. I own a theater company on the fourth floor of the Performing Arts Center in the middle of downtown Portland. I am the only Black woman who owns a theater company in downtown Portland. But it took me 30 years. You understand what I'm saying? It took me 30 years of figuring out what my battle is and what my battle is not. Going forward when I know I could take a whole bunch of people with me. You know what I mean? I could give opportunity to a whole bunch of people. So here's what I would say. In 3 weeks ago, and I hear what you're saying. Yeah, we don't need to sing Kumbaya. That's for sure. But what I'm saying to you is that the culmination of my University of Portland experience to this date was the fact that starting off as being the only turned into having a family who, you know, they didn't have to. There was enough people that they could just forget about me, you know. And my reaching out was because I needed to diffuse a situation that could have blocked me from succeeding. Meaning I needed to be a part of that culture because that's where I was living. I was living on campus. But being that didn't mean that I took anything away from who I am. I am still the great-great-granddaughter of a slave. I am still Native American. I am still Creole from New Orleans. All of those struggles that all of those people had are in me. So every time I have to go take a minute, it's because I don't want to unleash all that on a person who's ignorant. They wouldn't be able to handle it. You see what I'm saying? I want to get them out of their ignorance. So at least they might be able to hear us. You know what I mean? Just might be able to hear. Do you love these people coming and talking to you today? I have one thing I want to share with you, and then I'm going to just thank the old church, too. Can you give the old church a big hand? For having the foresight, you know, to see that they are a beacon. This place is the people's concert hall. It's the people's gathering space. And we've used it for so many different things. But what I want to share with each of you is something that I used to have to, my grandmother used to sing for me. And she did it because she used to tell me, I'm not going to be here when you're going to need to hear these things again. So I want you to instill them in your heart. And when you're in trouble, you just sing. Just sing. And that'll open everything up for you to receive the truth. If I could help so and as I travel along. If I could cheer somebody with a word. If I could show somebody that they're traveling wrong, then my living, it would not be in vain. I know a new day.
Amen. Amen.
Have a good night.